Okay, keeping things moving along. Next up, we have Glenn Rumble joining us this evening. So Glenn is a lawyer, a business advisor, and a nutrition enthusiast. He's also the author of The Holistic Nutritionist's Guide to Lawful Practice in Canada, which he's just finished updating for 2015. Now, this is a reader-friendly introduction to the major laws that regulate holistic nutritionists in Canada. And just as a total aside, if you haven't had the opportunity to read this book either in school or outside of school, I definitely recommend that you read through it. It's incredible, and they've got some at the back as well for you to take a look at. If you're practicing nutrition in Canada, you've really got to know what the laws are, and he's done an incredible job laying that out. Glenn is also a director of the Canadian Association of Natural Nutritional Practitioners and writes a regular column, The Legal Corner, about the business of providing nutritional counseling services in Canada. Glenn is a graduate of the University of Toronto Magna Cum Laude, Osgoode Hall Law School, and is a member of the Law Society of Upper Canada. So please help me in welcoming Glenn Rumble.
It's great being the only lawyer in the room because I haven't understood a single thing that's been said up until now. Now we get to my domain, so you're the ones who are going to be confused instead. Okay, I've been asked to speak about the regulation of the profession. And it's something that I see a lot in the chat rooms and on the internet and within the nutritional community. I've seen the IONC, one of your associations, are raising money for it. And my goal here today is to demystify it a little bit and hopefully let you know what it actually means when people say we are not a regulated profession, we should be a regulated profession. And I'm going to look at it in four different four chunks. The first will be definition. What does it mean to be regulated? The second will be, why do people want to be regulated? How is it achieved? And then finally, I'm going to look at the experience of the homeopaths and the naturopaths, both of whom finally had their colleges, up and running this year after many, many years of pursuing it, and what their experiences have been. So for at the very start, what do we mean by regulation? And what we mean by regulation, in essence, is you recognize as a self-governing health profession, just like doctors, chiropractors, nurses, naturopaths, dietitians. But that doesn't tell us much, because unless you've been a member of one of those colleges, one of those professions, you don't know what that means. So it really means three essential things if you're regulated. First means you have statutory status. It means the Ontario government's passed a law in the legislature saying you guys are now officially a profession. We'll use nutritionists. We'll call you nutritionists. It means that you as a profession will elect a college or would elect a college, and that college would govern you. And the college would essentially do a couple of things. First, it would determine the educational path to being a nutritionist. So your schools that you graduated from would have to comply with the nutrition college requirements if you're going to join that college. It also supervises for public safety, which means it investigates complaints that we see from the public, and it disciplines its members. An important thing is a college has no control over someone who's not a member of the college. I often see in getting questions from people, they're afraid of the dietitians or the naturopaths, because naturopaths are very mean and nasty, as we know here today. But they're afraid they'll do something and the dietitian or the naturopath college will come down on them. It doesn't happen because a college only regulates its own members. There are rules that you have to comply with, but that's the area of the OPP or the local police. It's not any of these colleges. They police and regulate their own members. So the first thing it does, it gives you statutory legitimacy or existence. The second thing it does, it gives you your professional title. Only a naturopathic doctor can call themselves a naturopathic doctor because the statute that creates them, created the profession, the Naturopathy Act, reserves that title for naturopathic doctors. Dietitians, similarly, the same thing. So once you're regulated, if you became a regulated profession, presumably the government would create a title for you. Again, we'll go with nutritionists or holistic nutritionists, and only people who are graduated from the schools approved by the college and then who are members of the college could then call themselves holistic nutritionists. So it's a means by which the public would identify you as a profession with the combination of skills and experience that they want in the area of health and in health services. The third component that some of the health professions have is the ability to perform what are known as controlled acts. In Ontario, we regulate primarily by saying there's a list of things that we think are dangerous activities, and we'll call those controlled acts. And you only can perform those activities in providing services to the public if you're properly trained and a member of a college or a profession that has been authorized to perform those acts. So in the handout I gave you, if you turn to page 5, you'd see from the Regulated Health Professions Act, an example would be moving the joints of the spine beyond the individual's usual physiological range of motion using a fast, low amplitude thrust. That is chiropractic. So they've created a controlled act that can harm someone if done improperly. A controlled act that can cause harm if done improperly. And they've said only chiropractors can do that. The general public cannot perform it. Nutritionists cannot perform it. Dietitians can't perform it. But something that's interesting is the dietitians in Ontario have no controlled acts that they're uniquely authorized to perform. So in effect, nutritionists who are not regulated right now and dietitians who are regulated right now can all provide exactly the same services because neither of those groups, can perform any controlled act that's reserved by the Ontario government. In fact, interestingly, nutritionists can probably do more because you don't have a college that mandates a scope of practice that says this is how we define our profession for ourselves, and if you venture past this, you're doing something outside the college boundaries. So you have more freedom actually than with a dietitian in Ontario. Next up, why do professions want to be regulated? You may have, if you're in favor of regulation, if you've thought about this topic, you may have your own ideas, but what I've seen online is prestige and legitimization. You're in the same camp as chiropractors and doctors and naturopaths and homeopaths. People want to facilitate interdisciplinary cooperation. The feeling is if you're a member of a regulated health profession, you're more likely to be part of a health clinic, and others are more likely to refer their clients to you because you have that legitimizing factor around you. You have your statute. You'd have title protection. No one can exactly who nutritionists are, and no one else can use that title. Some people think it will help them with insurance coverage, that by being a regulated health profession, Sun Life or other insurance companies may be more likely to include your service within the package that they provide to their customers. And many people think it will help them make more money because that whole basket of benefits that I've just circled. So that's why people want to become regulated. And then next up is how is regulation achieved? And I've already touched upon that. In a way, it's achieved by the government of Ontario passing a law saying you are now a regulated health profession. And on page 7, I've taken an extract from the Naturopathy Act, and you'll see that it covers many big things, but the main ones are scope of practice. So section 3 of the Naturopathy Act defines what naturopathy is. So if nutritionists were to be regulated, the government would similarly set out what a practice of nutrition is. In this case, there are some authorized acts, and I've quoted a few of them below that naturopaths are allowed to perform. Nutritionists couldn't do this. It establishes the college. See Section 5. The college is established under the name of the College of Naturopaths of Ontario in English, and I won't try to say it in French because I'm not bilingual. And then it establishes their restricted title. That's effectively what the regulation does. It's much longer because there are more sub-rules to doing that, but that's effectively what the statute does. But the key question is, how do you get the Ontario government to take enough interest in you that they might regulate you? And there's a gatekeeper out there, and the gatekeeper is called the Health Professions Regulatory Advisory Council, also known as HPRAC. Awful acronym, isn't it? HPRAC. HPRAC's job is to basically take recommendations from the Ministry of Health and then research and say, should this profession or be regulated or not? That's one of its main functions. And their determinations are non-binding. They make an assessment and recommendation to the Ontario government. But it's extremely, 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 to the 10 degree persuasive. If they say don't regulate, the Ontario government will not go against the recommendation because they're the experts. If they say regulate, the Ontario government may or may not regulate depending on its legislative agenda and whether or not it has the time or capacity to get around to it. And that's why it often takes many, many years to get around to. In looking at it, HPRAC states, and it's on page 8, you'll see, H. Pratt also wishes to remind all interested parties that the purpose of regulation is to protect the public. And this is a key point that we're going to get to now. They have two sets of criteria, primary and secondary criteria. And when they look at the primary criteria is all about public safety. To get regulated, any profession actually has to go to the government and demonstrate that you are a danger to the public. It's only if they see a public health risk that they will then decide to take the next step and do the more detailed investigation and then proceed down the path to regulation. And looking at whether or not there's a risk of harm to the public, they look at three essential questions. Is the profession involved in activities that have significant potential for physical or mental harm? Second question, is the profession engaged in making decisions and exercising judgments that can have significant impact of physical or mental health? And is there a significant potential of risk or harm occurring within the performance of professional duties? Notice significant, so it's not trivial. They recently looked at paramedics and emergency medical attendants and dental assistants. Now I think someone with a steel probe in your mouth jamming at your teeth and gums could have a significant possibility of causing harm, as would a paramedic who's providing emergency services at the side of the road. Both of those were denied. The threshold wasn't reached high enough for public risk. If they decide that you're a risk to the public in discharging your duties, they will then go to a list of secondary criteria, also very important. And the secondary, I've summarized a few of them on page 10. I think there's 9 or 10 in total. I've given you the top 7. I'll just read them out quickly. The secondary criteria is the profession able to exercise professional judgment autonomously? So do you function as a distinct profession? Is there a defined educational route to the profession? Is there a distinct body of knowledge that practitioners call upon in the practice of the profession? Can the practitioners support the cost of regulation? So even if they think you're a danger to the public and they think there's a distinct body of knowledge and scope of practice and everything else, the next question is whether or not the industry itself is organized and wealthy enough to support regulation. If it's not, they may do it in another way. But if it is, then you stand a chance of getting your own college. Do sufficient numbers of the profession support regulation so compliance is likely? Can the professional leadership demonstrate it will distinguish between the public interest and the profession's self-interest, favoring the public over the profession? Regulation exists not for you. It exists for the public. Because you are, if you're regulated, you have within the practice scope something that's harmful or something that can harm the public. Will regulation improve access to care and facilitate disease prevention and improve health outcomes? If all of this is answered positively, then the ministry will make a positive recommendation towards regulation, and then the ministry may take it up if they have time in the legislature and do it. Now, what's really important to focus on, and hopefully what's jumped out at you, is there's a very big gap between the goals a profession has when they want to be regulated and what the government is seeking to do when it regulates. So we looked at the goals of the profession, prestige and legitimization, facilitate interdisciplinary cooperation, title protection, make money, get insurance coverage for its services. And what's the government's goals? Protect the public from harm, get the practitioners to pay for it, ensure the practitioners comply, have a college that favors public interest over the members' interest, and improve access to health care and health care outcomes. So your two agendas are very, very different. And this is why with nutritionists and holistic nutritionists, and I may not get to it since I know I'm running out of time, their experience is the profession is still a little bit split. They were split going in on whether or not they were in favor of this, and there's still a bit of a split now that it's happened on whether or not it was the best thing that they could have done. Within the nutritionist community, though, I started out by saying that, there's a lot of advocacy for regulation, and the IONC has been raising money for it. So I thought I'd take a look and see what I could find about the nutritionist community. I have no affiliation with the IONC, so I have no idea what they're actually doing behind the scenes. But what I can tell you is that currently, according to H. Pratt, there are three groups that they're looking at, diagnostic sonographers, podiatry, and paramedics. Paramedics, I've just mentioned, in July, they tabled their report recommending against regulation, so podiatry and diagnostic sonographers are still out there. The reports haven't been tabled yet. Those are the only three groups they're looking at currently, which means that nutritionists are currently being assessed. The ministry has not asked HPRAC to look into it, and means the first real step towards getting regulated has not yet been taken by this industry. So if you're for it or against it, there's still a lot of work to be done on either side. In preparing for this, I spoke to a representative of the Naturopath College and the Homeopath College because they've both been just formally established this year, and what their experience was, and those are the last couple of slides. Naturopath took 28 years and 5 HPRAC reports to get regulated. I suspect that's because they were the first of the alternative health professions to really go through it. They were regulated under another statute, the Drugless Practitioners Act, beforehand. And I think HPRAC probably had a little bit of difficulty coming to terms with the fact that they didn't follow a strict Western scientific model or that we adopt in North America. But anyway, 5 HPRAC reports, 28 years. They were split beforehand. The total cost was unknown but stated to be significant. The government did help them with the cost of establishing the college, and their members currently pay approximately $1,500 a year for their membership fee. And the college does not exist for the members, meaning the college cannot provide services to the members along the lines of an association. It exists to protect the public. So the point was made to me that many of the members also are members of an association privately now, so their combined fees are probably around $2,700 or $2,800 a year between their private association plus their college. The conclusions, many members were surprised to find the impact of the scope of practice. If it's outside the scope of practice adopted by their college, they cannot do it. This surprised many of the members when they were regulated. Many members surprised that there are self-reporting obligations. And I found this interesting. I have it in my profession because I'm a lawyer. If you commit a crime, you have to tell the law society you've committed a crime. And then that goes on your record. And if you commit too many crimes, they may say you can't be a lawyer. Same happens for health professions, interestingly enough. And the registrar told me, it's even right down to parking tickets and traffic tickets. He said, if you're found guilty of something, you're supposed to tell them. And he said, now you may think it's trivial. And he said, it is 90% of the time. But if we had a member that was racking up traffic offense after traffic offense and dangerous driving and this driving and that driving, we might think, this person is the kind of personality that doesn't comply with rules. Perhaps we should, look at them more carefully. So he said, it's all information we want to know, and that was something that came as a surprise to many of the naturopaths. As I said, there's still, I understand there's still split as a community about whether or not it was a good thing or a bet not. I have 1 minute left, which is good. I'm on to homeopaths. This will be fast. They followed in the wake, I guess, of the naturopaths, who are the trend breakers. They took them only 11 years to complete their regulation. Again, profession split both before and after. Cost not known, but extremely significant. And they pay $850 a year for their membership fees to support their college. And their conclusions or their advice to me was that forming a college and determining the appropriate educational path was a massive undertaking and very divisive and difficult to do. They said positively, it has legitimized their profession. They do think they get more respect from the public and the media now that they're regulated. And it did help them weed out some of the outliers and incompetence that were within their profession. And they emphasized that a college is very different than an association. It exists for the public, not for the members. And their profession, as I said, is split. So my conclusion on regulation is the last slide, 5 or 6 key points. It's a long, difficult, costly process. It requires an industry with an organized profession and strong advocates. You have to be able to prove that your profession is potentially dangerous to the public in order to get regulated. If you're going to advocate for it, be clear about your goals, because keep in mind your goals may not align with why the government wants to regulate you. Interestingly, the homeopaths told me it hasn't impacted their insurability at all. So their members are not finding there's a big uptick in the number of insurance companies that are providing insurance on their services. It had no impact whatsoever. And currently, right now, the first step hasn't been taken for this profession. There is no assessment underway. And that's it.
Wow.
And I understood all of that. I hope you did. Unlike everything else.
Any questions? questions for Glenn.
Yes.
Yeah, I'm curious to know why the homeopathy, you may not be able to answer this, but I thought homeopathy would be considered to be a dangerous profession, other than perhaps would take away from a patient going to see a doctor where they are pro-vaccination.
Yeah, I can't answer that. Maybe because they have a strong diagnostic aspect as well, and whenever you diagnose, you can misdiagnose, and maybe that's within the scope that they wanted. Perhaps, I don't know. I didn't actually think to ask that question. What I do find interesting when I look at the risk to the public is one might ask, then why the heck are dietitians regulated? If we think nutrition is a safe thing, I think that's a historical anachronism. It's because they were regulated before Ontario changed its policy, because the government used to have a very different policy, and many provinces do. Now, the modern trend is towards risk. And the idea is, unless something is harmful, let's let consumer choice reign supreme in the marketplace. So unless you can show us there's a reason why this needs to be curtailed in some fashion or disciplined, let people make their own choices. And I think dietitians might predate that, you know, that change in regulatory policy. Yes?
If the industry were to become regulated, would it be likely that all the current people who are currently nutritionists would be grandfathered in terms of their qualification under this new college, or would they have to re-qualify under the new college's criteria?
Yeah, it would likely be a mixed bag. The fellow from the naturopath college, no, the homeopath college, sorry, he told me within their industry there was a grandfathering. And it was a combination of education and practical experience. And if you met, the college tried to establish a fairly generous policy that would allow people to transition over, even if their historical education didn't meet the new requirements of the profession. But there was a practice requirement in there. You've been engaged so many years, and there was some upgrading requirements for it as well. So there's no certainty, but likely some form of grandfathering. Any other questions?
All round,
okay.
Round.
Yeah, I know. It was fast. That's why I gave you the handout, so you can take a look at it in detail in your own time.
Fantastic. Thanks. Let's be glad we can. I actually teach at IHN, and we use this book as the curriculum, and I always, every time I read it, I find that there's something else that I pull out of it, and it's so fascinating. Just learning about our industry, what we're allowed to do, what we're not allowed to do, and maybe even the future of our industry and talking about regulation. I know there's a lot of misinformation out there and a lot of confusion out there. I hear it all the time in the schools. And so I think it's really great that we have someone as experienced as Glenn looking into all of this information and clearing it all up for us. It's really, really fantastic.